We'll rock on with the January 25th, 2008 edition of the Rain Report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. This is the Rain Report. I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK. Did you miss the last couple of Rain Reports? You'll find Rain Reports dating back to June 2006 on the archive page at www.therainreport.com. The art of RDFing, radio direction finding, is not new. Transmitter hunts, otherwise known as fox hunts, have been a part of amateur radio for many years. Ah, but what about wildlife tracking? Hams have only been involved in that exotic aspect of RDFing for only a few years. However, according to CQVHF homing in columnist Joel Mell, K0OV, radio has been used to track animals for some time.
It started decades ago, but has gotten more and more sophisticated as time goes by. But really, most of it is being done very, very simply. The animal wears a very small tag, a radio tag. It has to be small because in order to protect the critter, it needs to be less than 3% of the critter's weight. It emits a signal in VHF, sometimes 172, sometimes 216 megahertz. The signal consists of very short RF pulses. The biologists follow them with radio direction finding. The studies can sometimes be to determine how young disperse after they grow up, or sometimes it's even being used to study migratory animals like birds. It's also used for protection. Here in Orange County, for example, there are cougars in the mountain area which have been equipped with radio tags, and some of the schools near these wildlife areas, or near these wild areas, I should say, have receivers which are used as a warning that the cougar may be in the area of the school. So it actually has a number of uses, but most of it has to do with research. These are not exactly Part 15 devices. They really kind of fall between the cracks in the rules, but they are coordinated. There is a national agency that tries to keep researchers from using the same frequencies in the same area, that sort of thing. These transmitters are very low power. The typical distance may be a mile or less when the animal is on the ground. There's a lot of frequency reuse is possible, but of course, again, since animals do travel, they have to coordinate them so that they don't travel into each other's areas.
As I understand, a federal wildlife agency actually coordinates these frequencies. Do you happen to have an idea of how many of these tracking programs are actually going at the same time?
No, I really don't. I am not directly connected with any particular agency. My involvement as a ham radio operator came about 1998 when I was contacted by a researcher in Saskatchewan who was doing an experiment with burrowing owls and trying to figure out where these Saskatchewan-born owls were going during the winter months. And they had attempted to follow the owls, which were radio tagged with aircraft, but the aircraft encountered bad weather. As a result, of course, the aircraft were grounded, but the owls weren't. So the owls got away, and they were trying to find some people who could monitor within some states in the USA that they thought that these animals might go to and see if they could hear these wildlife tags. I said, okay, I'll put out the word. Give me the frequencies. I'll put together a website. I'll put out some emails, and let's see if we can get some hams to listen. And it actually generated a great deal of interest. As time went by, we had some other researchers with some other species that got involved. We've pretty much had something almost every year since then with one project or another, including sandhill cranes, loggerhead shrikes, some other owls, and other animals. Generally speaking, it's mostly been birds, but occasionally there have been some other animals that we've looked into. I couldn't tell you how many actual researchers are out there, but I do encounter them from time to time in the strangest places. April and I were driving through southwestern Missouri and stopped at a wildlife sanctuary just to look at some birds that were there along this water area. And we encountered a researcher who was doing some experimentation with some critters in the area. Many universities are involved.
What kind of range do they get when the birds are actually in flight?
Well, again, it depends on the transmitter power. It's basically a horizon issue. And of course, if the bird is a high-flying bird, it's going to give you more range. But typically, I would not expect more than about 5 or 10 miles for a bird in the air, and certainly much less than that, closer to a mile or so when the bird is on the ground. Generally, in the simplest sense, we're looking for people who can just hear the tags and say, okay, I'm at such and such a set of coordinates, or I'm in such and such a township, and I'm hearing this signal. That's certainly useful information, and you don't need any really special equipment to do that except a receiver, which will receive that part of the spectrum, and a good outdoor antenna. Certainly a rubber ducky type of antenna is not going to be adequate. If you have some sort of a disc cone antenna, which is a omnidirectional antenna that covers a rather wide frequency range, or maybe a long periodic beam, which again covers a fairly wide frequency range, this will be the best way to hear them. Now, a scanner receiver will hear the radio tags, but it isn't the optimum receiver because these tags, of course, don't occupy a great deal of bandwidth because they're just a pulse. In order to improve the signal-to-noise ratio in your receiver, you need a narrow bandwidth receiver. An FM receiver, for example, with a bandwidth of 15 kilohertz is going to pick up a lot of noise along with the tag. So a receiver that has, say, a single sideband mode or a CW mode with a narrow filter is going to do a lot better, although it's going to be that much harder to hear the signal because you're going to have to tune more carefully for it. It basically sounds like a tiny little chirp. The typical pulse is only about 20 milliseconds long and occurs typically about once per second. So you hear a little chirp, 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 like that. That's basically what it sounds like. And the pitch will depend, of course, on how you tune it in on a receiver with a BFO. Simplicity is the key. Again, we're trying for very, very light weight and very, very long battery life. So what is commonly used is what you may have heard called a squigging oscillator. It's basically a one-transistor circuit with a couple of tune circuits in it, one of them tuned to an RF frequency at 172 megahertz or wherever the tag happens to radiate. It's set up so that it oscillates at such a very low rate that it will be on for just the 20 milliseconds, and then it will be off for a second or so. And it's sort of two oscillators in one in that respect. It creates a very distinctive signal. If you take the audio coming out of your receiver and put it into some audio software and look at it, you will see the pulse is not a nice square pulse. It rises and then it sharply drops, and then there's a little bit of RF that tags on for maybe another 50 milliseconds. And that's how you can tell, and it's very important to be able to do this, because there are other signals out there in the spectrum that can fool you into thinking they are a wildlife tag. Clock oscillators in microprocessors, that sort of thing, can fool you. So it's sometimes necessary to do that little bit of analysis, and you're looking for that the shape of that pulse and that little rat tail at the end that is very, very characteristic of these squigging oscillators.
How many RF tags are actually placed within a flock of birds or herd of animals when it's being tracked?
Well, it really depends on the researcher's budget and the researcher's ambitions in terms of his ability to track them. I would tell you, for example, that the current study which we have going on, which is of loggerhead shrikes on the East Coast, has 16 birds tagged. And these were young that were basically captive bred in Ontario in Canada. We did a study a couple of years ago, and this was the first time we actually had a study where some hams got involved and actually did tracking on the ground of some bats. The species is Indiana bat. And these Indiana bats live in caves in the New York State area. I don't know what Indiana bats are doing in New York, but that's the way it is. They will be in this cave during the winter, and then they will come out in the spring and spread out into trees. And the purpose of the study was to find out the mating habits of these critters. So they had to be tracked to the individual trees. And we found a couple of hams in the area that were proficient in radio direction finding that volunteered to help the researchers on that. And there were about 40 bats that were tagged in that particular study. Those are kind of typical numbers.
I'm speaking today with Joe Mel, KZOV, a veteran radio direction finding enthusiast. And we're talking about tracking animals using RF tags. This is the Rain Report. What is the cost for each RF tag?
It really depends on the manufacturer. I can't give you an exact price, but I think we're talking in the order of about $50 per tag. The Indiana bat study has been completed. Actually, that study went on for a couple of years, and the ham involvement only took place in 1 year. I wrote an article on that for CQVHF magazine for my column on radio direction finding with some interviews of the people that did it, and they were just really excited, by the way, to be involved in this. If you like radio direction finding, this is kind of a no-holds-barred transmitter hunt because the bats don't obey any rules. They go where they want to go, and they don't obey boundaries, and they kind of take you where you're going to go, and you have to go where they are. The current study that's going on right now, the loggerhead shrike study, actually began in the fall. And these are typical for Northern Hemisphere studies, where the animals breed and raise their young in the spring, And then in the fall, in the case of birds, they tend to fly toward the south. Oftentimes, the study will look at the dispersal after they grow up. In other words, the birds will generally disperse before they take off and migrate. And researchers want to know, well, did they go a mile and establish a nest, or did they go 5 miles, or they go 10 miles, or did they go to another province? And then eventually they go south, and that's usually when they lose them, and that's when they want to find out about this. The study started in the fall, and at the time I was told that the tags would only have about a 3-month battery life. And then I got an email around Christmas time that said, we did some further looking, and we discovered that our tags actually have much longer lasting batteries, and it looks like they'll be good through mid-February. So I recently put out the word again, and we are now once again looking for people to listen for those tags, which still should be in operation for a little while longer.
In what area?
They're not 100% sure, but the anticipated area, and this is based on previous bandings where they would band the birds and then discover banded carcasses, and they would be reported back to the researchers, and where these carcasses were found would be clues as to where these birds may end up. In terms of live sightings, it's, of course, again, you never know what you're going to find, but they're typically expecting Tennessee, North Carolina, and states to the south toward Florida. Those are the states that are the target areas for the loggerhead shrike study. A lot of things can happen. Certainly, the battery life is a function of a number of things, and there's a statistical variation, of course. Another thing that can happen is predation. The birds may have fallen victim to predators or may have died for some other reason. So we don't know how many of the birds are even still alive, because only a small percentage of these endangered loggerhead shrikes make it back to Ontario, and of course, that data would be very helpful if we knew how many of them were hanging around in the southern United States or wherever they end up for the winter.
Joe, if someone would like more information, where would they go?
Well, in terms of the volunteer studies that we're doing, the focus is my website, which is www.homingin.com, as if you were homing in on something, written as one word. Now, at that site, of course, there is a page that talks about the newest projects, and of course, we only have one going on right now, which is this loggerhead shrike project. The frequencies are there, along with information from the researcher at the University of Guelph up in Ontario, updates as we receive them from the researchers. There's a lot of other information on the site, too. Certainly, the history and some of the other projects that we've worked on is there. Information on those squigging oscillators that I told you about, if you didn't all get it on the first pass, you can read about it at the website and actually see some of the waveforms of those squigging oscillators and give you some clues as to how you too can identify exactly whether it's that clock oscillator or it's the wildlife tag. Also, there is information about a mailing list, an internet reflector, which has been set up called the BioTrackers Reflector. That's where the people that are most interested in this topic get together and list any new projects that may be coming up. Also discuss equipment and scanning techniques for that. One of the topics that generates the most interest is various receivers scan differently. You can't just use an ordinary scanner and program in all the frequencies and turn it on and let it go, because these tags are only transmitting for 20 milliseconds at a time. So what's the probability that as the scanner passes the frequency of interest that that little tag's going to go off? It's pretty low probability, and even if it did, all it would be a short blip and you wouldn't know it. So various receivers can be used in different ways by opening the squelch. Some will scan with the squelch open and some won't, and some of them have software that will assist in this. And we discuss that on the BioTrackers list. That's the best place for that sort of discussion.
That was RAIN founder producer Hap Holly, KC9RP, speaking with CQVHF homing in columnist and veteran of radio direction finding, Joe Mel, K0OV. You can find all you wanted to know about RDFing, radio direction finding, and more at Joe's website, www.homingin.com. That's homing in, spelled H-O-M-I-N-G-I-N. homingin.com. The RAIN Report is copyright 1990-2008. RAIN. All rights reserved. Now, for Hap Holly, I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK, bidding you a very 73 from all of us at RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.